And hello. Thank you so much for joining me. This is Ellen Kamite, the natural nurse at naturalnurse.com. And we are bringing you The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, which we bring you every Monday, 3 to 4 p.m. right here on Progressive Radio Network. And, of course, one of the great things about Progressive Radio Network is that you can actually join us anytime, 24/7, at your convenience by going to prn.fm, visit the archives, and then scroll down to the tease, because the show is The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. But there's all kinds of other fabulous shows right here on Progressive Radio Network, and you can listen to any of them or download them onto your iPod. Listen anytime, day or night, or join us live on Mondays 3 to 4 p.m. as you are doing now. Today, we are very happy to interview our guest, Medicine Hunter Chris Killam. Chris Killam is known as the Medicine Hunter, and that's his website, medicinehunter.com. He is an author, educator, and founder of Medicine Hunter Incorporated. He has conducted medicinal research in over 20 countries and recognizes that currently the global health care is in crisis. The natural environment is undergoing widespread devastation, and indigenous people and their knowledge are disappearing at a rapid rate. Chris works to focus on traditional plant-based medicines and their sustainable trade as a way to contribute to a better world. And he is also a prolific author, has written several books, including The Five Tibetans, Five Dynamic Exercises for Health, Energy, and Personal Power. Thank you so much for joining us today, Chris.
Well, it's my great pleasure to be on.
I've known you a lot of years and seen you really grow in your research and development. And what led you in the beginning to become what you now are in terms of being a worldwide expert in natural medicine?
Well, I think, Ellen, the first thing is that when I was a teenager, my friends and I kind of overnight became impressed with the idea that things natural were somehow better, that things synthetic, that many of the chemicals in the environment weren't so good for us. And I can say that our intuition was exactly correct, although we were really thin on knowledge at the time, but we had the right inclination. And then from that time forward, I became interested both in travel, especially international travel, and herbal medicines. And so from something that really was about, 46 years ago now or so, I've developed those interests into, a career of traveling the world, investigating natural plant-based medicines in their host countries, working with indigenous native people, helping to establish trade in those botanicals, and hopefully making a difference in the scheme of healthcare today.
And hopefully, yeah, as you say, hopefully, because I attended a medical school dinner just a couple days ago, because I am an instructor in a medical school as well as being an herbalist, an ethnobotanical person as you are. And, you know, the feeling tone there is very depressing. It's just scary to me that we are clinging to things that not only go up in the face of intuition, as you picked up as a young person, but as you know now as a researcher, the science really supports a much higher level of health and wellness when we stay away from jumping on board the most invasive and the most toxic treatments first.
Well, yes, and in point of fact, I think it's fair to say that our trauma medicine is the envy of the world. I mean, if I get into a car accident, that's not the time to run off to my aromatherapist. You know, I want to go to the emergency room. I want to get taken care of properly, and I think that our trauma medicine today is really outstanding. You know, it is life-saving. It is hygienic. It's very high level. And I've seen hospitals in some other countries, and you wouldn't want to have to walk through them on your way to the bus. So I think that we have very wonderful care that way. But when it comes to chronic care, when it comes to the treatment of chronic diseases, take your pick, whether we're talking about type 2 diabetes or arthritis or any number of other diseases, our medical system really falls short, and it does so because the drugs that are used, and really our medical system has turned into a drug dispensation scheme, are often quite ineffective, or if they are effective, the negative effects of those drugs are onerous. I mean, every year about 300,000 Americans die from the proper use of over-the-counter prescription and prescription drugs. And by contrast, most years, nobody in the United States dies from herbs. So it's very clear that herbs are vastly safer. And, you know, I really believe that death is an unacceptable adverse drug reaction. I think that drugs should heal instead of kill. And so my understanding of the work that I do and my ambition is to get people things that are effective, that do work, that don't have negative effects, and that aren't going to kill them.
Now, that should certainly be what you would think is a common sense paradigm, because certainly, as you said, there's a place for conventional medicine, but I do believe that the least toxic remedy used first would always be a better choice. And now we're seeing such an amazing array of scientific evidence showing the efficacy and safety of natural products, but we do not see a coherent movement in conventional medicine to embrace what I call, and I'm sure you call, traditional medicine. What
right.
do you think that holdup is?
Well, I think the holdup is economic, of course. I mean, if you look at the number one greatest source of advertising revenues in the media today, it's the pharmaceutical sector. I mean, we are a wholly owned subsidiary of Big Pharma. And, I know these companies. I get invited to speak to them. They all know that herbs are real. I mean, I speak to Roche and Pfizer and Merck and other GlaxoSmithKline. I get invited in to talk. They all know that herbs are real. They understand they work. It's just they can't make money on them. So I think that who was it, Roosevelt? Somebody said the business of America is business, sadly, but truthfully, our culture seems to be reducible to profit margins. And so the big profits are to be found in the pharmaceutical sector, and the influence of pharmaceutical companies on medical schools and on the lives and careers of medical doctors is extremely strong. So by contrast, the herbal companies are not engaged in comparable lobbying, they're not engaged in comparable funding of medical schools, they're not engaged in comparable, you know, golfing trips to Antigua to hear about the latest purple-colored drug. And so, really, the playing field is vastly uneven, with the pharmaceutical companies playing a dominant economic role. The money talks and everything else walks.
And yet, with your focus on natural medicine, and I'd like you to give our listeners your definition of traditional medicine, because I'm a real stickler on this. Even when I'm at a medical school board association meeting and people throw around the word traditional in all kinds of ways, I really like to quantify the use of the word traditional to something that is truly traditional medicine, which you investigate in great detail. How would you define traditional medicine?
Well, traditional medicines are those medicines that have been used in various cultures around the world prior to the advent of what we consider now, you know, conventional synthetic medicine. Traditional medicines can include foods, they can include herbs of different kinds, you know, many of the spices. And so really these are the medicines, the natural remedies that predated what we now have in our toxic culture of modern synthetic pharmaceuticals.
And as I'm sure you see, they use the word traditional, though. And there's other words. Modern medicine, which we both agree is certainly very useful, although it's rather useless for ongoing disease problems, but it can be certainly useful as an emergency intervention, and they have some excellent diagnostics to figure out what might be wrong with someone. But those are can be called conventional, they can be called allopathic, they can be called modern medicine, so there's lots of appropriate names. But they cannot be called traditional because usually these therapeutics, especially the pharmaceutical drugs, don't last long enough due to changing over to more expensive, more modern ones, or because of the high level of toxicity or the terrible risk assessment of these various drugs, and the drug companies getting sued because of that. They don't become traditional because they don't last long enough to be honored with that word traditional.
Right, right. And you know, I think it's very interesting how the drug sector has done an excellent job of co-opting language, traditional being one, but also the completely unbelievable and nonsensical term side effects. I even hear intelligent people in the herbal sector using this term. And there is no such thing as a side effect. No such thing has ever existed. If you take Prozac and it makes you sleepless and it causes your your sex drive to plummet, those aren't side effects. Those are effects. Those are effects occurring in your body. And we have been trained to accept this diminutive notion so that we make light of those. Well, that's not the effect of the drug. Those are side effects. No, they're not. There's no such thing. We are so, it's just like, I guess I don't want to get into political language here, but there are so many instances in which language is crafted to diminish a notion or mislead people. And we have pretty much all swallowed this total baloney notion of side effects when nothing, no such thing exists.
That's good. It's another just semantic term.
Yeah.
So that's very good to point that out. Now, you have some really exciting things going on at your website, medicinehunter.com, Chris. Look at these great pictures of you in the South Pacific.
Yeah.
I just love them. Tell us about your visit there. I mean, these look like, were these people just dressing up for indigenous dancers to put it on for you, or is this how they actually still live?
Well, I spent 10 years working in Vanuatu, South Pacific, which is where that was shot. This is how these people live. This isn't a let's dance for Chris and the photograph, and so we'll put on our special tribal clothes and then get back to our, you know, Dockers kind of photo. This is how these people live. And I think that the amazing and wondrous thing is that in some very few parts of the world today, we still have people living in a much more traditional way than, you know, what we typically see. And in the case of Vanuatu, it's a warm, tropical, peaceful, somewhat idyllic environment. It'll be destroyed in time, but for right now, it still remains largely clean. And so you have people there living much as they have since antiquity, with the exception of drawstring shorts and flip-flops. But otherwise, you know, they live in tribal villages. They live rather simply, and they enjoy things that often people here do not, like real community and, days in which the children, you watch five kids play with a stick and a coconut all day, and they're happy and they're content, and there is no such thing as ADD or ADHD, and they aren't being drugged. And so I take every opportunity to be in more traditional cultures because I enjoy them, because these people are the plant experts, and I was always looking for real plant experts, and also just because the time is extremely rewarding due to their natural human values.
That's true, and they're getting harder to, and harder to find. I know areas that I have investigated which were similar even 30 and 40 years ago. When I returned there, I'm thinking of a place I went to recently in the Dominican Republic, which actually housed indigenous culture. But now the entire place, although they still live there, is covered with plastic.
Right.
For
right.
one reason, they always used coconut shells as a dish or a bowl or an eating implement,
yeah.
and threw it on the ground appropriately.
Right.
Well, now they throw on the ground all kinds of plastic and styrofoam containers, and there is no garbage pickup.
Right, right. And the sad thing, of course, is that, you know, I mean, we see plastic water being drunk all over the world, and not only is it not healthier than any other water, but of course it may contain bisphenol A, and the result of people discarding billions and billions and billions of plastic water bottles per year has had an enormously damaging effect on the land and the oceans globally. I mean, I remember it was a bunch of years ago being up in the Himalayas in this really picturesque forest and walking along, just, you know, enjoying the view and the fragrance of the trees, and then I glanced down a hillside to my right, and it was this massive cascade of hundreds and hundreds of tons of plastic bottles just going all the way down the hill. And it's very difficult to see this. I mean, I am by nature a pretty positive person, but I do have to say I've become quite discouraged by the state of the environment, which, you know, is in fact getting worse in every single respect. Every considerable parameter of the natural environment is being, you know, reduced in terms of quality. The environment is being destroyed, and plastic waste, you know, 10 or 15,000 year trash is one of the big ways that that is taking place.
Well, I want to thank you for sharing your perspective on that. And we're just going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion with our guest today, medicine hunter Chris Kilham. So we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And welcome back once again to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we're talking with ethnobotanical expert Chris Kilham today. And you can join us on an ethnobotanical tour as well. In fact, we just got back from spending a week with the Maroons, who are still a tribal culture on the northern coast in the island of Jamaica. And our next class is now forming to go there. We also have an edible and medicinal plant walk at the New York Botanical Gardens coming up in May. And we have daily workshops in outside edible and medicinal plant gathering and medicine making. And you can just go to naturalnurse.com, go under schedule, and you'll find out where and when. So we'd love you to join us. We'll be in the New York area, Florida area, all over the country, and in many areas of the world. And Chris Kilham is a medicine hunter, author, and educator who we are interviewing today. I suggest you visit his website, medicinehunter.com. And Chris, you are really busy taking this message to mainstream media.
Well, I certainly am giving it my all. You know, I've been very fortunate to garner a lot of media. I mean, I come from a TV and radio family, so it comes very natural to me. But For the past 3 years, I've been the Fox News medicine hunter, so my segments on herbal medicine, and they never tell me what I can and can't say, appear in 100 countries. And I think that, you know, because media has such a massive influence on our culture and really does rule our culture in many ways, it's important that those of us in the natural sector who are trying to promote healthier ways of health, you know, have access to the media, certainly as you do with your show and as I do with my Fox gig.
And you're on Dr. Oz all the time as well, and he's got to be the preeminent spokesperson for all kinds of things medicine these days.
Oh, there's no question. Oz is he's the big gorilla, you know, and he is very pro this category and well informed, and I think that he's you know, really just an excellent, excellent person to, you know, to be leading the charge, because he's got great credentials. You know, he's the head of cardiovascular surgery at Columbia University Medical Center, and he's, you know, extremely knowledgeable. And fortunately, his program reaches many millions of people. So, again, it's what can we do? Because we're not taking senators and congresspeople to the Capitol Grill every afternoon for free steak lunches. You know, what can we do to influence public habits? And it's interesting that because these natural remedies work, we've got about 70 million American adults or so using them now, despite the fact that we don't have the massive promotional dollars that the drug companies do. And I take that as a clear sign that effectiveness of these things wins over the marketing dollars that are being spent all around us.
Well, it's almost like the jig is up. People have tried something like using drugs for various diseases, sometimes find that it doesn't work. And I find with mainstream medical doctors, they often start getting very interested in natural therapies when it doesn't work for themselves or their loved ones.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, a lot of people come to natural remedies as a last resort. They've tried everything else. Everything else has made them sick. They want something different. They come to this. They're not sure if it's going to make any difference whatsoever. They often get great results, and they say, well, you know, how come my doctor didn't tell me about this? How come I didn't know that this stuff was real and works?
That's so true. Now, you have written so many great books, and one that I'd like to talk about, although it's almost hard to choose, but one that I know is a really big seller and a lot of people are interested in, and that's called, the book is called Hot Plants, and what a great name. What is that book about?
Well, Hot Plants is about nature's proven sex-enhancing botanicals, and I spent about 10 years traveling around the world, investigating sex-enhancing plants of various kinds, and then I thought that since there are so many drugs for sexual enhancement being marketed out there today, I thought that I would put out a book that gave alternative suggestions. So if people want to boost libido, if they want to enhance sexual function overall, they can do so more safely than they can with many of the drugs that are available. So I wrote that book, and then when I was about halfway through it, I went, gee, you know, if people read this book, what they're going to do is they're going to have to go out and they're going to have to find all these individual herbs. So I teamed up with Enzymatic Therapy, who's, you know, as you know, is a supplement company, and came out with Hot Plants for Him and Hot Plants for Her formulas. And so the whole thing has been very interesting, and I've gotten a lot of positive feedback, especially from women.
Well, one of the things that's interesting is you as the medicine hunter, and you are actually within indigenous cultures, and I know for a fact, since we do that same thing, that you don't just walk in there as a tourist and they suddenly share this information with you. You spent years developing those relationships.
Well, that's true. That's true. And, you know, I think that in this work, I mean, first of all, business is people. That's what it is, and that's how I think about it. So when I go to these cultures, I'm interested in building relationships. And when I build relationships, I build trust for all the right reasons. And when that happens, people open up their knowledge. And then if they're interested, for example, in trade, if they'd like some sort of economic benefit for their village or area or community, whatever, then I work with them. And it is a process of building trust and spending time. And it's great fun as well, because then I make friends. I learn about new cultures. I have wonderful experiences that are very rewarding. So it's just not just a matter of showing up with cash in hand and saying, hey, I want to buy some herbs from you.
Right, and you do develop them as a partner, so if the plant really makes it big, they get some kind of monetary feedback to support their village or their knowledge.
Yes, they do.
Rather than just stealing it from them, as,
right.
as has been done in the past, and I think that is absolutely excellent. It's called intellectual property rights and honoring that. And, you know, that's getting very big in the European market. I recently lectured at a conference about the use of botanicals in cosmetics.
Uh-huh.
And it, on the European side, that's becoming a mandate, believe it or not, where you have to show how there is feedback to the originator of the knowledge of the use of specific botanicals. So it's interesting that it's actually moving into something that is even more recognized.
Well, yeah, I work with cosmetic companies throughout Europe and the U.S., and I spend an enormous amount of time with the major companies in that sector, and they're very keen to have not only natural ingredients that are effective, but also ingredients that are produced more sustainably and that do you know, accrue benefits back to the native people. So I think we're seeing some change.
Right.
And the change is taking place slowly, but at least it is taking place.
Well, let's talk about some of these specific herbs that you talk about in your book, Hot Plants. Some of them might be familiar for people. They may have heard of, let's say, maca and yohimbe, and you can discuss those. But then there are some that might be much more obscure that they never heard about.
Well, I mean, I think that people are hearing more and more, for example, these days about rhodiola rosea. And I like to call rhodiola a gateway herb. It's one of those amazing herbs that when you take it, you feel it. You feel it usually within a day or so. And the feeling is tremendous. It enhances energy and endurance and stamina and improves most parameters of mental function. Interestingly enough, besides being a significant sex enhancer, it is the single most effective antidepressant agent in any category, in any sector of medicine that we have. And it's widely used by psychiatrists throughout Asia and increasingly so in the U.S. But it also enhances sex drive. It enhances erectile function in men. It improves menstrual regularity in women. And so when I thought of writing Hot Plants, it seemed important to include rhodiola rosea in that list. You know, one of the things that I appreciate about some of these botanicals is that they have lots and lots of different effects. On the one hand, being sex enhancers, on the other hand, being useful for brain function or enhancing immunity. Most good herbs don't do just one thing. They, in fact, do many things, and that's what makes them so, you know, so wonderfully versatile.
Now, when you talk about rhodiola, it's interesting because just today I was searching for something, and this is back to the cosmetic use of plants, because rhodiola also can be effective UV deterrent that can be used in cosmetics. So I'm actually looking for that particular study. But it's got such a wide range of uses. And as you said, I don't take a lot of supplements personally. I tend to stick with, like, really high-quality, nutrient-dense food. But I take some. And one of the things I actually do use is rhodiola. I find just what you said. It's not, it gives you energy, but it's not like a stimulant kind of energy. It's a very deep, profound kind of energy.
Well, it actually causes the body to produce more of its own energy, and I think that's the wonderful thing about it, you know, is that it once you get, I mean, I'm a traveler. I travel extremely heavily. I'm on jets all the time. I mean, I just did a run to L.A., followed by a run to New York, followed by a run to Utah, followed by a run to Australia, all back-to-back, you know, and I'd be a dead man if it weren't for rhodiola, but I find that rhodiola pretty much eliminates any possibility of jet lag, and so, you know, as you delve into these treasures, whether it's rhodiola for brain function and energy or something like curcumin, the turmeric-derived material for pain, you know, these things are truly effective. I mean, I think about how many Americans, because people all over the world, but how many Americans experience pain on a regular basis? And if they take something like ibuprofen on an ongoing basis, they run the risk of kidney disease. If they take acetaminophen on a regular basis, they run the risk of liver problems. And yet if they take something like curcumin, you know, as a pain-relieving agent, as an anti-inflammatory agent, not only does it not cause those negative effects, but the good news is it actually promotes a healthy cardiovascular system, improved brain health, improved mood, improved immunity. And I think that we're in an interesting time because we can use some of the pharmaceutical science and technology, for example, to make concentrated herbal extracts, to make preparations of different botanicals that, you know, if you look in Ayurveda, their recommendation is that you take turmeric root and you boil it in fatty buffalo milk and then drink that. And I think it's fair to say that most of the people who listen to your show or most of the people who get the messages that I send out aren't going to do that. They're not, you know, that's not how they're going to address their health. Instead, they're going to, you know, take a capsule or a tablet. And so if we can provide something like a concentrated curcumin supplement that delivers health benefits, people can get the pain-relieving results with having to go in search of fatty buffalo milk.
Very good. So here's another one for you. It's got a great name and some science backing it up, although I think the most dramatic thing about this herb, really, it's an interesting name because they call it horny goatweed.
Yeah, horny goatweed derives from China, and I spent time in China investigating horny goatweed just about, I don't know, 400 kilometers or so south of Shanghai area. And this is a plant that, you know, when I talked with a number of medical doctors in Shanghai, I asked them if they thought this was legitimate. And to the last, they all said, oh, yeah, Epimedium absolutely is legitimate for sexual enhancement. I agree with you that the studies are slim. There really aren't as many studies as there could be or should be. Nonetheless, this is something that enhances sex drive and sexual function in men and women and has a long, long history of use in China for those purposes.
And I always pay attention. Of course, I look for scientific studies, but it's really not my first introduction into what possibly can be a very efficacious plant because where they get their name has to come from somewhere. And when people say it comes from old wives' tales, that's actually very interesting to me because how would a plant become passed down in oral tradition if there was no efficacy? If you look at something like motherwort, for instance.
Well, sure. I mean, people will not use something multi-generationally unless it works. They just will not do that. They will not continue to use something that doesn't have efficacy. So when we consider the scientific studies that are done on botanicals, it's not that those studies validate the botanicals. The botanicals are already valid. It's that they corroborate, what we already know from traditional use. And I think that's what makes the collection, the aggregation of scientific studies so valuable, is that they add to the traditional knowledge that already exists.
Yes, I totally agree. Now, I want to ask you about one plant that I don't know much about, and I always love to learn more. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Zalow root, and I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, nor do I know the genus and species of that. I would have
Right.
To
well, Zalow is also known as Shirsch Zalow or Ferulus harmonis, and this is a on the one hand, it's a great plant. On the other hand, it's extremely hard to get in the U.S. at this point, so I tend not to promote it that much. But it grows only on Mount Hermon, the mountain area between Syria and Lebanon. And it is a very wonderful plant that is sort of an adaptogen, and it has a variety of health-imbuing properties, and is legendary for its sex-enhancing properties. So you have a lot of preparations made from it in the Middle East, some sweetened, they like to make preparations with honey and sugar syrups there. So sweetened preparations or preparations made in drinks of different kinds. Interestingly enough, the Syrian army has a manufacturing facility where they make teas out of this. And this has been pretty well studied, mostly in Lebanon. And it's a significant sex enhancer. Sadly, it's hard to get in the U.S. So I tend at this point in time not to promote it too much.
But you enlightened me, and that's part of why I spend all these hours every week doing radio and media, is to learn more for myself, because
I am
a learning addict, and that was one plant I was not familiar with. So thank you for enlightening myself as well as the audience.
And
that shows that it's a constant evolving process. I'm sure you're constantly learning new things no matter how long you've been involved in this field.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, I think I'm more alert to learning new things as time goes on, because I realize that this process never ends.
Yeah. Now, Chris, you have a wide range of information in terms of books that you have written. Like, for instance, there's one that's a larger kind of topic, and that's called the Whole Food Bible.
Yeah, that is an older book of mine, it's still very good though, in which I basically go through foods category by category and talk about how you can choose natural alternatives as opposed to the foods that may be made with preservatives, artificial colors or flavors, artificial sweeteners, how you can choose other than meats, produced with antibiotics and hormones. We are what we eat. Foods really are our primary medicines. And if we can eat well, if we can eat natural foods, if we can stay away from the toxic foods that so many people are consuming, we can live better lives, endure fewer health disorders, and have to resort to fewer, medical treatments of different kinds.
So it's a really more holistic approach even than using herbs, because I find, unfortunately, some people feel like they don't have to really honor the fact that they're the steward of their body. They can just go along and do whatever they'd like, and then when there's a breakdown, either use pharmaceutical drugs, or if they get involved with herbs, basically just use herbs as a pill and as a cover-up, rather than a whole holistic lifestyle like you talk about in that book.
Right. The idea, and I think you know this very well, but the idea is to engage in a broad range of healthy activities of all different kinds that support well-being. So, those things may be using herbs on a regular basis that enhance health. Those things may be eating high antioxidant foods. It may be exercising every day, drinking pure water, breathing fresh air. There are many, many things that add up to a healthy lifestyle. It's not just eating acai or drinking pomegranate juice every day.
Now, I want to talk to you about what I believe is your latest book, The Five Tibetans. I'm noticing on the copyright it came out in 2011, but were you the original author as well in the 1994 edition?
That book is 20 years old. I wrote it. There was a book that came out around 1935 by a guy named Peter Kelder, and he called it the Five Rites of Rejuvenation, and it was, you know, of the style of that time. And basically, I took these methods, studied them for a number of years, determined that I really liked them very much, and decided that I would, put them back out in a form that was a little bit more up to date than Kelder's version. And fortunately, this book is now published in 20 languages. It's in about 22 different countries. I have all sorts of editions here at home, Croatian and Greek and Russian editions. And I kind of call it the little book that could. The Five Tibetans are five simple exercises. They take about 10 minutes a day to perform. Most people can perform them reasonably well. And really the idea is to, do something every day that enhances energy, strength, flexibility, and just sort of improves overall health. And that's what these exercises do.
Now, do you have any kind of video of them that someone could watch? Or what I was looking for, because I'm actually love this exercise system and have been using it for years, and your pictures are great when you're showing yourself actually doing them. And I would love sort of a one-sheeter that had them all on the same sheet or a video version.
Well, if people will go on to my website, medicinehunter.com, they will see that, in fact, the Five Tibetans are demonstrated on video on the site. I did a Fox TV news segment about the Five Tibetans, so people can get the book. I highly recommend getting the book because it really explains how to do these correctly, and Lord knows a lot of people perform things incorrectly, but you can get the book and then additionally watch the video and really gain a good understanding of how to perform these things practically.
Yeah, that was wonderful, because I've been doing that set, and I heard it called other things as well, not only the Five Tibetans, as you said, in terms of rejuvenation. And it's very fast, which I think is one of the best things about it. It's something you really can incorporate into your life. I do it in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I practice these every morning. I finish my yoga practice with these, and I find them tremendous, just tremendous.
So I'm on your website right now, Chris, and I hope that many of our listeners, when they're listening now or if they're listening later, do look at medicinehunter.com. Can you show me where the video is? Because I'm actually on the website. I'm on the book, The Five Tibetans. And do you know where I would go from there to find that video?
Well, let's see. If I just get onto my own website and I go to yoga and meditation and I go to the Five Tibetans and I scroll down.
Okay, you go.
If you look at the Five Tibetans page,
right,
you look directly straight at it, and you will see in plain sight Fox News right there in front of you, and you click on that and you get the video.
Okay, great. So the video is right there on the Fox News when they were covering the Five Tibetans.
Yeah, yeah.
That's excellent. And, that's free, so nobody even has to order a CD or anything like that, and that's excellent information. And what's the background of that? Is it really from Tibet?
Well, there's no way to know. I mean, I have learned a number of other Tibetan methods that have some similarities, so I suspect that these may well be, but they might not. I mean, perhaps they came from Nepal or northern India. I don't think, I call them the Five Tibetans because they're purportedly from Tibet, and it sounds easier than the Five Rites of Rejuvenation, which I think is just sort of an old school name. But, you know, if they turn out to be from Nepal, okay. The point is they work, and they work extremely well, and they give you energy, and they make you feel terrific. And at the end of the day, with people having so little time, if you can only afford to dedicate 10 or 15 minutes to a regular practice, this is a very good practice to do.
And you've done so many tremendously interesting pieces. Fighting Cancer with Scorpions was on Fox News. I find that very interesting because I was actually bitten by a scorpion once, and instead of killing him, I put him in a tank and made him a pet. I named him Stingy, and he was my pet for 5 years. He used to come right over to the glass and dance around with his little claws. I find that one particularly interesting.
Well, I have to say that the one time that I was stung by a scorpion, I smashed the hell out of it because I didn't appreciate the sting. But I guess,
oh, it hurt,
know,
and you had to tie it off, too.
Different strokes for different folks. But for sure, you will find, you know, the great thing about being on Fox, and I don't participate in their politics at all, but because they're a gigantic international news organization and because these segments I do go out to 100 countries, it gives me an opportunity to reach millions of people. And I think that at this point in time, there's a lot of hunger, a lot of curiosity, a lot of interest out there in things natural. And those of us who know what we're talking about and have the ability to articulate it now have a friendly media that, instead of being antagonistic toward us, which was the case for a very long time, you know, these people want to know what we know. I mean, there's a reason that I do segments on NBC and ABC, you know, Good Morning America and 2020, and CNN follows me around. I mean, it's because they finally want to know about this category that they derided for decades.
Right, and it's so excellent. I love seeing your pieces because it's always full of truth. And sometimes when they have these little tiny sound bites, it becomes misinformation. But you know how to use a sound bite to have a beginning, a middle, and an end, even in that segment that is really very evidence-based as well as from the heart. So I always appreciate that in your presentation.
Well, thanks so much. You know, you have to make, at the end of the day, if you're going to be on TV, you have to make good TV. Otherwise, people will just plain tune out.
That's true. And, you know, we have to tune out actually now, Chris, because we are right at the end of our very interesting hour. Thank you so much for being my guest right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Zig. And I'd love you to, you know, give people sort of a closing statement of your wisdom.
Well, I'd like to say that because plant medicine is still the number one category of medicine in use in the world today, and because plants absolutely provide health benefits and they do so safely, if people need to do something for their health, they can really do no better than to first check out the plants that are available to them before checking out the more toxic options that exist in the over-the-counter and prescription world.
So what would be a good place to start? Our engineer just told us that we're granted a few more minutes, so I'm very happy about that. So what would be a good place for people to start if they wanted to investigate herbal medicine?
There are a couple of places. I mean, they can certainly go on my website, medicinehunter.com, and they can look in the medicinal plants section. You know, I have a huge section called Plant Medicines A to Z, which is under the Medicinal Plants tab, and it gives just dozens and dozens and dozens of plants and what they are and what they do and what to take and products that work. And, you know, so they can do that. Also, I think my favorite book on the topic is Dr. James Duke's The Green Pharmacy. He's one of the great living experts on plant medicines, and he makes the book simple and accessible for everyone, even though his knowledge is vast and deep. So those are two places I'd suggest, medicinehunter.com for the plant medicines A to Z, and the book The Green Pharmacy by Dr. James Duke.
Now, a couple, because I'm looking on there right now, like something like acai, you have some really great information about that plant. And, you know, then what happens, unfortunately, is it might get this soundbite about it being useful for weight loss, and people will not change their diet, not do the five Tibetan exercises or make any other change except to drink acai juice a couple ounces a day and, you know, expect some kind of 20-pound weight loss. And that's too bad.
Yeah. I mean, acai is not a weight loss plan in any case. It's not a diet aid. It's a purple fruit with great antioxidant benefits, and it gives you energy, and it should be treated as such. You know, people keep wanting that magical weight loss agent that's going to cause them to lose 20 pounds in 2 weeks, and really that is known as calorie restriction and daily exercise. If you really want a miracle, if you want something that will help you to take the pounds off, you cut out, you know, a lot of the food that you eat, you cut out the sugar, you cut down the fats, you cut down the saturated fats, you get rid of all the junk, you stop the fried foods, and instead of sitting around on your butt watching TV 5.5 hours a day, which is the norm, you get out, you exercise, you walk, you do whatever it is you have to do, bicycle, swim, to get those pounds down. There is a miracle diet out there, and it is called calorie restriction and daily exercise.
It's so true. I love your quote under the acai. Like you say, anything that's popular gets made into a diet. Acai is no more of a diet than the eraser on your number 2 pencil.
Right.
And you were quoted in Natural Food Merchandiser about that.
Right.
Because that is where natural products get a bad name, because of misinformation.
Yes. That's the case. And really, you know, we have a responsibility to guide people correctly to things that actually work so that they don't waste their time and waste their emotions on things that are totally useless, that are just scams utilizing natural products.
Well, another one that's been getting a lot of press lately, and you have a wonderful picture of yourself under chocolate, cacao, the food of the gods, and shows a picture of you actually collecting it in its whole raw form. What about that? Because that's getting so much press now as a high antioxidant health food.
Well, cocoa is without question the ultimate superfruit. There is nothing that even vaguely compares in terms of antioxidant protection. It is the greatest of all of the protective foods on Earth. There's nothing better. If we could get people eating enough cocoa, certified organic, non-Dutched cocoa every day, we could save lives, because it is, without question, the greatest of all cardiovascular aids. So cocoa is a great thing. The idea is that if you're going to be utilizing it, you want certified organic, because you don't want agri-poisons in your food. You want it non-Dutched, because Dutching or alkalizing cocoa, while it makes bitter cocoa smoother tasting, it destroys the antioxidant activity of the cocoa. So you want something that is, non-Dutched. And you take a tablespoon of food of that every day and toss it into a blender drink. It's going to do wonders for your health.
Well, yum, yum. And thank you so much, Chris. And
thank you, Ellen.
New York Times calls you part David Attenborough, part Indiana Jones, Mr. Killam, an ethnobotanist from Massachusetts. So thank you so much for being our guest today. And if you want more information, you can visit medicinehunter.com. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. Find us at naturalnurse.com, and hoping that you stay healthy.